Hello and greetings from Frascati. This is Space Kate, and what an exciting day it has been. I realise it is quite late, but who could possibly sleep after the day that I've had? It doesn't matter that I got up at 4 a.m. and felt miserable and had to fly with Ryanair to get here. It was totally worth it. We've had a fantastic tour of Ezrin. We've had a kind of private audience with astronauts. We have tweeted and tweeted and tweeted and tweeted, because this is a space tweeter, so, you know, that's what you're supposed to do. And we even had dinner with Astro Paolo, Astro Katie, and Astro Samantha, who are all fabulous. Fabulous, fabulous, fabulous. And I'm very excited, which meant that I couldn't sleep. So, instead of going straight to bed, I've ended up talking for too long in the lobby of the hotel to one of my co-conspirators on the tweet-up, who's running this really cool new project that I've heard snippets about all day and have been meaning to actually sit down and find out more about, but it's just been all too exciting and stuff. But now, before he goes off to do something else tomorrow in London or something dull like that, I thought I'd get the lowdown. So this is some kind of new exciting project, involves telescopes and people can get involved. Let's keep it simple. What is it?
Okay, basically, we are running a project involving schools using the two Fox telescopes. The Fox telescopes are two-metre telescopes. These have got mirrors the size of the Hubble, pretty much. One of them is based in Haleakala in the island of Maui in the Hawaiian Islands. And the other one is based in Siding Spring in Australia, near to the big Siding Spring Observatory and the Anglo-Australian telescopes. So it's quite nice we've got two telescopes basically on opposite sides of the world. And after a really successful summer where we've been working with a student by the name of Hannah Blythe, who was a summer kind of intern working at Folks, 18 years old, high school student, and we were working on a project looking for new asteroids and comets. And during the course of the summer, we found approximately 40 new asteroids orbiting between Mars and Jupiter, which was quite cool. And the International Astronomical Union are currently beavering their way through all the data that we've sent them, and we've had assignments sent back on about 9 of them so far, so we've actually got the ability to name 9 out of the 40 so far, and they're continually working through the data.
So you get to choose the names?
We do. We're not allowed to name them after ourselves, but we can name them after, you know.
Oh, how dull.
Yeah, it's not like comets. Comets, you automatically
you can name it after me if you like.
I could do that. There's a lot of people asking to have asteroids named after them. But it'd be fun. I mean, we're going to try and name some after... One of them's going to be named after Hannah, hopefully, once the IAU decide. And we're going to name some after some schools and lots of cool things like that. Anyway, it was so successful. And we were finding objects that were really, really faint because these telescopes are so powerful. I mean, they've got incredible mirrors, incredible cameras on them. And we could find objects that were, like, really, really, really faint. Anyone who doesn't understand stars in the sky, you can see with your own naked eye up to about what's called magnitude 6, which is quite a faint star. These telescopes can go to magnitude 21, which is like trillions of times fainter you could possibly see with your eye, or even with a kind of normal backyard telescope, it's thousands and thousands of times fainter than that.
Can I ask a stupid question?
Yeah.
I've decided, just to put this in some context, the best way to learn is by asking questions, and if you kind of keep nodding when you don't understand, you'll never learn. So I've decided that I'm going to put myself out there as the one who asks the stupid questions so that everybody else can sound clever in the pub. So I'm just checking, these telescopes, are they basically massive versions of the kind of little things you might have in your house and you look through and you actually see something, or are we talking about these kind of radio infrared, telescope.
No.
You actually see something and that's what you will see, just bigger.
You actually do see something. They are exactly like the telescopes that you'd have in your backyard, but they're much bigger and they are completely robotically controlled. So all you have to do is go into an internet browser, like Chrome, IE, Firefox, whatever, log into a website, the Fox Telescope website, and if you've got an account, you can then basically request time on the telescopes. They will then give you a 30-minute or however long slot of time on the telescopes. You then punch in coordinates for where you want to look. The telescopes will automatically move. There's a little webcam in the observatories that shows you that the telescopes are moving. They'll then tell you that they're pointing at the object that you want to look at, and then you just hit the go button and it will take pictures for you, and you can tell it what kind of pictures you want to take, how long you want the pictures to be for, all this type of stuff. And then the information gets downloaded directly over the internet to your computer,
So you get the pictures?
You get the pictures, yeah.
How quickly do you get them?
Within about a minute.
Oh, wow, that's cool.
Yeah. So, and all the data is publicly accessible. And this is the cool thing that people can get involved in. Even if you don't have a Fox Telescope account, all the data is on the Fox Telescope website. So if people want to join in the hunt for what we're going to be talking about, they can do so quite happily.
Because this is audio, and that sounds like an interesting word that could have many different spellings depending on how you heard it, could you just spell it out for us so that we can stick it into Google and have a look while we continue this conversation?
Yeah, it's www.faulks, that's FAULKES, -telescope.com.
So Faulks like Falkland?
Like Faulks, yeah. It's a chap called Dil Faulks who is a kind of entrepreneur, and he's UK-based, but he put in about £10 million into setting up these two telescopes in Hawaii and Siding Spring. And it's been incredibly successful. As I said, it's mainly an educational project aimed at public outreach in schools. Astronomical societies, if they're doing work with schools, can get involved as well. If you're a UK school or a teacher or a student, you can sign up for it anytime.
But your new project is not just about pointing these telescopes into the sky and looking at any old thing. You're actually searching for Snoopy.
Yeah, well, Snoopy was the lunar ascent module from Apollo 10. Now, Apollo 10 was obviously the mission just before the moon landing, and it was one of the most significant missions of the entire Apollo program. It was Tom Stafford, Eugene Cernan, and John Young. Now, John Young is an incredible astronaut. I mean, the guy went from, you know, the Gemini missions through to the Apollo missions, and he actually flew the space shuttle. He was the first pilot on the space shuttle in STS-1. So he's one of the few astronauts that's really done the whole gamut of what NASA had to throw, you know, from the 60s through to the 80s. So him, Gene Cernan was obviously Apollo 17 as well, one of the last people on the moon, Tom Stafford. These were the three kind of astronauts who really set the trail for Apollo 11's landing later in 1969. So in May 69, they set the world record. They are still the fastest human beings in history. When they orbited the moon, they basically set a world speed record for the fastest people ever.
Does that count as a world speed record, given they were not?
Not on the world, yeah. It's a Guinness World Record. Yeah, it's a good one. So they basically came very, very close to landing. The only thing they didn't do on the entire mission was a landing itself. They did all the docking manoeuvres, etc. And then basically a lot of the Apollos, what they did on a lot of the other Apollo missions was they crashed them into the moon to test seismometers, etc. But with Apollo 10, they didn't. The lunar ascent module called Snoopy, and there's two components, there's Charlie Brown and Snoopy, named after the Peanuts characters. They sent Snoopy off into what's called a heliocentric orbit, which is basically orbiting around the sun, and it's been doing that now since 1969.
So is this the bit that would normally be left on the moon if they had landed? Or would it have... No, hang on, because it's the ascent module.
It's the ascent module, yeah.
It's the bit that takes off.
Yeah, it's the bit, if you watch any of the Apollo videos where you see them taking off from the moon, that's the ascent module. So there's obviously the landing stage, which is left on the moon. That's what obviously has been imaged quite recently by some of the orbiting spacecraft that have been going around the moon in quite nice high-resolution detail. Now, Snoopy's the ascent module, quite shiny, silver-coated. So quite reflective, but it's only about 4 meters across, so it's not a big spacecraft. And if you wanted to see a kind of example of how big it is, if you go into the London Science Museum, for example, they've got a mock-up of the Apollo lander on there, and you can see roughly how big this thing is. So that was then
that always used to amaze me as a kid, because it looks like it's just wrapped in tinfoil, and I was like, they could have made a better model. And then over the years I've gone, oh right, they really did just use
pretty much, very yeah. Thin. Captain Foil, I mean, you know, yeah, it was really... It's
not just tinfoil, obviously, but the stuff is very thin because there was no real...
There was no real need to, and they needed to keep the weight as low as possible. Yeah, so...
Wow. And also, the Science Museum in London does have...
They have the other part of Apollo 10.
Hidden away,
they
do
have it. It is an amazing thing. It's the only Apollo capsule outside of the continental United States. So if you do get a chance to go to the Science Museum, in the space section, they've got the Apollo lander mock-up, and they've got loads and loads of cool stuff. But if you keep walking down through the space section and have a look on the left-hand side... go figure. It's an interesting one, that. You will see the only Apollo lander outside of the US, the only Apollo capsule outside the US. And it's the real one. This isn't some kind of mock-up or fake or whatever. This is the actual Apollo 10 capsule. So we're looking for the other bit that's still drifting around in space, that John Young and Tom Stafford and Gene Cernan basically said goodbye to in I think it was May 1969. So we're hoping we're going to find it.
So, I mean, how do you know it's still out there? Hasn't it just, you know, wouldn't it have crashed into something or burnt up in, you know, I don't know, would it deorbit or does it just keep going off on its merry way?
The data that we've got, it's quite interesting. We've got what's called the state vector data, which is the last known kind of orbital position and kind of velocity and trajectory it was heading off on. We got that from the public domain. We've also, however, enlisted the help of people from the Apollo 10 mission itself. So we've got guys who worked on what's called the FIDO, which is a flight dynamics officer, and the guidance officer and the retro people who were sitting in Houston guiding and manoeuvring this thing and doing the tracking on it. We've got data from those guys, which is just unbelievable. It's never been seen in the public domain. And we've got a company in the United States called SEE, Space Exploration Corp, who are now modelling using loads of mathematical processes the basic orbit that the Apollo 10 could be in. And it's an amazingly difficult challenge. We're not saying it's going to be easy. It's going to be unbelievably hard. Because this thing could be literally anywhere within about almost one astronomical unit. So we're looking at around about 135 million kilometres of space. That's a lot of space.
So you're going to need a lot of volunteers.
Well, that's the idea. We're getting loads and loads of schools involved using the Fox telescopes. We're going to be publishing the coordinate data as and when we get it from SEE and the FIDO people and the, you know, Apollo guys on the Fox telescope website. We're going to be publishing that, you know, week by week, so that anyone with a reasonably large telescope can actually have a go. We've got a radio telescope in the United States that's getting involved in this as well, which is quite fun. But yeah, anyone can have a go. And the cool thing is that we're going to be doing good science as well, because even if we don't find Snoopy, and it's a one in a million shot that we'll find it, we're not saying it's easy. We may never find it. It may take us years. We just don't know. But the orbits that these things are on are typically in the same kind of orbits that you'll find things like comets and asteroids. So anyone who gets involved, we found 40 brand new asteroids in the space of about 5 weeks in the summer. These are massive telescopes. We're going to be pointing them at the same kind of areas, and hopefully school kids, students, whoever gets involved will find new stuff, will find moving objects, will find asteroids. And yeah, hopefully it'll all, you know, it'll all generate some really good science as well.
Short pause for me to have a slight coughing fit there. But it sounds like a really exciting project, and I like shiny things, and you're looking for a, well, 4 meter size.
4 meter shiny thing.
4 meter size shiny thing in an enormous amount of space. So space plus shiny things, what is there not to like? If I log in or if I'm part of this, how on earth will I tell if I've seen this thing? Or how will I know if I found something else even more exciting?
Okay, well, with comets, for example, if you see a comet moving in the sky, it typically has what's called a coma, which is the gas around the comet. So you can pretty much identify a comet, and they have very specific orbits that you can typically tell, you know, if it's a comet or not. Asteroids are the same, and asteroids move at a certain rate typically as well. You can get very fast ones. We had a really good one recently that skimmed the Earth about 9,000 miles up, or it was really, really close. 2011 MD, it was called, nothing snazzy, but it was about the size of a small house, and it skimmed by the Earth, and we were imaging that. The thing with Snoopy is, if it's on the orbits that we think it could be on, it'll be moving quite quickly. It'll be moving extremely quickly relative to anything in the background. It'll probably be tumbling, it'll probably be spinning around in space, we'd imagine. Which could hopefully give us differences in light levels as it streaks across the sky. In the telescopes, we're not expecting to see any detail on this. We're going to see a line or a little streak across space. If we then match up what we think the velocity and the speed of it across the sky are against what we think the size of it and the magnitude of it is, and it's in the right orbit and it's moving in the right kind of direction, etc., and we find something that's, you know, hitting all of those nails on the head, then we're going to use another telescope, and we're going to use what's called a spectral camera, and we're going to do what's called spectroscopy on it. Now, in 2002, there was an asteroid discovered, which turned out it wasn't an asteroid. It was part of the Apollo 12. It was what's called the S4B stage, one of the kind of main booster stages on the Apollo 12. and it was just tumbling through space. They found it. The guy took loads of pictures of it. Amateur astronomer found it, took loads of pictures of it. It was then put through loads of different analysis, and they kind of worked out that the orbit was not typical. They then ran some spectra on it, and it turned out the spectra that was coming back was atypical of white paint, which is exactly what was on the outside of the Apollo 12. So this has been done before. This is not completely unique as an approach. The thing with the S4B is it's a lot bigger than Snoopy. And Snoopy's a really iconic thing. I mean, you know, as I said, these guys, you only have to go onto YouTube and you can see amazing interviews with Gene Cernan and John Young, and you can see some of the footage where they actually release Snoopy into space. So this is a module that was there for them, and they, you know, they speak really highly of it. The astronauts, they love it and they think it's a really cool thing. And the feedback we've had on this project so far has been almost universally positive. It's been incredible. Reaction from the press, the news, people on Twitter, people on Facebook, school teachers, students, loads of people want to get involved. So we're happy about that, and we're happy that we'll be doing good science as well, that it's not just, you know, some silly idea of like trying to find a spacecraft. We are actually trying to do good science at the same time. We're going to be hoping that kids will learn how to do what's called astrometry, which is learning how to identify moving objects in space and measure them and see how they're moving. We're hoping that, you know, kids, students are going to find new asteroids, find new comets as well. And if we do find Snoopy, it'll be the most amazing thing ever.
I want to get involved. I need to do it. What is the one place that I should be looking for more information, just like one website or one Twitter account that I should be following? Where do I find it? And I think it's time to go to bed.
Okay, well, it's folkstelescope.com is the website, and the Twitter hashtag is #ProjectSnoopy.
Project Snoopy. I've always been a fan of space, I've always been a fan of Snoopy, and of shiny things, so win, win, win. And at, oh goodness me, 2 o'clock in the morning, I think perhaps... That's one hell of an exciting day done. Who knows what will happen tomorrow?